You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the 49th episode of Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by Golden State's Director of Basketball Analytics and Innovation, Pavel Sidhu. Sidhu, who took over for Sammy Gelfand this past summer when Gelfand was hired away by the Pistons, is a basketball junkie who happens to be great with numbers. In his role as the Warriors' go-to analytics guy, he compiles daily reports going over trends, opponents, and anything else Steve Kerr's staff may want to know. His job, which didn't exist little over a decade ago, is now a staple of pretty much every NBA front office. The truth is, Sidhu might be the most important member of the Warriors front office that you've never heard of. Pavel Sidhu is Golden State's Director of Basketball Analytics and Innovation. We caught up at the Warriors facility Monday afternoon about his unlikely career path, the dawn of the NBA's analytics age, and much, much more. I'll have our conversation right after the break.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Here's my interview with Pavel Sidhu, Golden State's Director of Basketball Analytics and Innovation.
Basically, you used to work at Microsoft at one point, right? Yeah. So tell me how you got a job at Microsoft and kind of how that role fit into your whole journey.
So it was interesting. So for me, it was kind of Seattle Supersonics. Yeah. That's, you know, I always want to work in the NBA.
Yeah.
And the Sonics leave.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, okay, what am I gonna do?
Right.
I need a job, you
right.
know.
Right.
And my parents, who are, I'm the first generation born here. You know.
Where are your parents from?
From India.
Where in India? Just out of
Punjab.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So for them, it was okay. You know, there's like I have four careers to pick out. You know.
Which are?
There's like being a doctor, being an engineer. You know, and then it was like working in IT. You know. And it was okay. So I had to get something. So I got a job with it was a contracting company with Microsoft, and from there, you know, just make them happy, you know. Mm. As I was doing that.
Well, and you had graduated from, when did you graduate from UW, University of
Washington? 2005.
And what was your major?
A business major.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, did you major in business with the goal of getting into the NBA, working in the NBA?
Yes. Yeah, and at that point, you know, there wasn't a data explosion.
Yeah.
You know, there was no such thing as analytics that was really, you know, at least I didn't know of.
Right.
And so my goal was just to figure out a way. I didn't know how.
Yeah.
But during my time when I was a student, I forged a relationship with the general manager at the time, Rick Sun.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent a lot of time with him just watching games, learning how to scout, and just kind of being around people. I was able to, you know, I got a credential through them. And during that time, I was able to meet a lot of folks in the NBA. You know, that's one story. Seattle Times, it was saw Isaiah Thomas when he was coach of the Knicks.
Yeah.
So I kind of shared with him, hey, you know, this is kind of what I want to do. And he kind of looks at me, just gives me a hug.
Yeah.
And he says, good luck, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and it was just cool. It was Isaiah Thomas,
you know? The Knicks were in town?
Yeah, the Knicks were in town, yeah. That was the game that Nate Robinson was suspended that game. UW guy, so, you know, so I always remember that game.
So You basically did. How exactly did you get involved with the Sonics? Were you just a student at UW and you just wanted to kind of ingratiate yourself with the local NBA team?
Yeah, you know, what I would always do is every time we had a class project, I always try to, you know, convince the rest of the team I wanted to do it on basketball, you know? And, you know, and I've always noticed, you know, folks in sports, you know, folks in general are very open to students.
Mm-hmm.
So that allowed me to get a lot of face time, you know, with, you know, actually, I had met with someone from the marketing side, the Sonics, and he had mentioned, hey, you should meet the general manager of the Sonics. And you know, from there we just struck up a friendship, mm-hmm. you know, a friendship that to this day he's still my mentor.
And were you, was it freshman, sophomore, were you in a class at the time that you kind of passed off?
Yeah, you know, initially I think I was in a class, and it was kind of the first, like, in, you know, meeting, you know, but then our, I feel like after I got down, after I finished at the University of Washington, is when our friendship got a little bit stronger. And during that time, you know, there was an ownership change, and he was let go, so he had a 1-year sabbatical. And during that time, that's when I felt like we got really close, and he later on became the GM of the Little Hawks.
Okay, yeah. So he was still in the area and yeah, had a lot of free time, obviously, because he wasn't working.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. Like, I'm, you know, him being a general manager, and I'm just, you know, doing analytics, my days, my minutes are all tied up. So it just baffles me that he made that much time for me.
Yeah.
Because he's 100 times more busy than I am, you know?
Yeah.
So I was trying to remember that myself.
Yeah.
You know, in this position, you get a lot of folks wanting to work in analytics from, you know, local universities, other universities, and always trying to make sure I... No, respond back to them or get on the conversation with them.
Do you remember the class project or whatever it was that was kind of your first in to talking to them?
I'm trying to remember what it was. That's a good question.
Do you remember what class it was?
You know, I think a marketing class. Yeah. Then with him, I also did this independent study. Mm-hmm. And it was an independent study based on your career, like what do you want to become in your career? And mine was like becoming a general manager. And so I used that. And I actually met with like Bob Whitsitt too.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm from Portland, so I appreciate are? That. Yeah, so the jailblazer.
Bob was like, so this is an actual class? Like, he was just like, what? Yeah, Bob was a great guy.
So would you just, like, hang out with him?
Yeah,
and
I just go shadow him. You know, like, you know, Q&A, go to his office and just kind of ask him questions of, like, how he got there.
That's
and,
pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And it just, you know, for a student, I want you know, it was a dream of mine. You know, when you start pursuing, it becomes a goal, right? But that goal became so much closer when I was able to be on the other side of the desk. Like, to me, it was like, yeah. I met him. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, yeah. I can do this too, you know?
Right, right.
He's human. He's just like, you know?
Right, right.
So that just, to this day, that just drives me.
Right.
You know?
Is that still a goal of yours to be GM, or do you like the analytics?
Yeah. The goal of mine is to be a general manager, work towards becoming a GM for sure. Mm-hmm. And this is great. I'm around with one of the best in the NBA.
Yeah, Bob Myers pretty good.
Yeah, he's pretty special. So it's great. You know, I'm always, you know, watching, observing, you know, how he conducts meetings and his thought process. So it's great for me to now be in the inside looking at what all a GM is. You know, it's much different than what I thought it was.
Right.
You know.
And didn't Sun kind of, that was, he kind of told you about the analytics revolution right at that time and told you that you know, there's jobs that just focus on this?
Yeah.
You know, is that when you kind of started to think that this could be a niche for you?
Yeah, you know, so I'm at one of the practices of training camp, and there's this guy kind of on a round table, the laptop, working on stuff. He's like, you should do what he's doing, you know? And I'm thinking at that time, like, you know, what is it? It was Dean Oliver, right? Kind of the founding father of basketball analytics. At the point, I was like,
did he work for the Sonics? Or?
Yeah, I think it was a consulting, consulting role, or if he was there, I don't know exactly. I didn't talk to him, and later on, you know, remember the name, and you know, he had, you know, he basketball and paper, right?
Yeah.
And so for me, what's the question again? So salty pride.
No,
man.
No, like, you're good. It was just basically if he's kind of the one that turned you on to. Fact that analytics could be a job in the NBA.
Totally, he did. So he mentioned it to me. Then I ended up getting a job at the University of Washington,
right?
And so they had recently hired a new athletic director, Scott Woodward, who was loved everything about Moneyball, and it's when the book came out. And brings me, you know, I had a, you know, had a little interview with him, and he was like, "Hey, I have a kind of a freelance project for you to do. You know, here's something. What do you think?" So I go back and I work on it.
What was the problem?
And it was actually breakdown the basketball program and looking at it from recruiting to encore to graduation rates. So it's kind of it's all.
So it wasn't just basketball X's and O's. It was like the how, you know, was it revenue and that kind of stuff.
Everything.
And that's a pretty big project.
It was, you know, and I worked my butt off on it, and so you know it took me about a week or two to do. You know, I dropped it off. And I get an email saying, "Hey, thanks, this is great." It's like, okay, you know. Then about 2 hours later, I get another email. "Wow, this is, we really like this. Can you come in this week?"
Yeah.
Come in, and then they actually created a position for me, which was great. And during that time, started doing a lot of, you know, Moneyball stuff. I was looking at different salaries, you know.
So this time, are you working at Microsoft?
No, I'm at University of Washington now.
Oh, no, okay. Okay, yeah. So were you full-time? So they hire you full-time, but before that, when you're still doing that freelance role, were you working at Microsoft?
No, there was this, during that time, I did not have a job.
Okay. Yeah, did you just leave Microsoft?
Yeah.
You just weren't feeling it?
I wasn't feeling it. And secondly, I've started doing stuff with, like player agents a little bit, just side projects, just helping players like with the financial.
Researching analytics and stuff.
Yeah, it was more financial, but number related stuff. So then back to University of Washington. So I'm doing all this work, and during that time, I would go watch basketball practice. And this is when Lorenzo Romo was, you know, coach there. And I would just, you know, observe things and started thinking about things. And I had read basketball on paper, so I decided to put together a kind of a packet, breaking down Husky basketball. And it was like a 50-page report, you know.
How long did that take you?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I mean, it took me a while. It wasn't something I did in one setting. It was just kind of worked on over time. And it was a lot of me kind of creating my own work because there was nothing really out there at that time. And, you know, referencing basketball on paper and just trying to, you know, watch. I was watching did they have DVDs? Yeah, I was watching DVDs, stopping, going, looking at things. Well, we've come a long ways, right?
Yeah.
And I put together this packet for him. And, you know, I get a meeting with him, reviews it, says he likes it, you know. And that was pretty much it. And I would hear from other assistant coaches saying, like, oh, this is great. We love this. Yeah. Like, trying to figure out how to use this. And then we had a couple other exchanges just walking down the hallway. And then eventually he asked me if I wanted to join the team in a full-time role. Mm-hmm. And
what was your title?
It was Director of Basketball Strategies. Okay. Or, yeah.
So were you on the bench? Were you behind the bench?
Yeah, this is crazy. So I actually, with a laptop, due to NCAA rules, you cannot be on the team on the bench.
Right.
So I would sit at the scorer's table, and it would be the closest seat to the bench.
Okay.
So during every media timeout, I was relaying real-time information to the coaches. So I would, you know,
what kind of stuff?
We're looking at different levels of efficiencies, if that's based on lineups, if it was certain play calls we were running, and a couple other things depending on who that opponent was that we wanted to focus on. If it was like paint touches.
Yeah.
But this is a lot of it.
Was anyone else doing this at the college level at this time?
I was told by our SID that I was the first full-time hire in this role. So
yeah. So it's kind of. So you didn't even know a job like this existed because
I just
exist.
I love basketball, and I love numbers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just like.
Well, as a kid, were you one of those kind of stats nerds who would pour over all those numbers?
But I was more of like just watching basketball. That's all I wanted to do is watch basketball. Then I would have it on. I would also have, like, we had this little basketball hoop in our house, and I would play. I would mimic it. Mm-hmm. So anything that they would do, I would, you know.
Sonics, I'm guessing?
Yeah, it was Kevin Clavero, you know. Everything they would do, you know, if it was, Detlef Schrempf a three, you know, Gary Payne, Sean Kemp dunks. I was trying to do all of that.
Was it like a little, you know, Fisher-Price type thing, or was it?
It was an 8-foot hoop.
Okay.
Yeah.
You had it in your house?
It was a house, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we had like a little play area.
Okay.
And so I was just trying to mimic them. So I was more watching the game than I was. Actually, the numbers behind it, believe it or not.
Could you play? Did you ever play at the high school level?
I played. Yeah. I played. I would say, it's okay. Yeah, it's okay. Depending on who you're comparing me to.
Yeah. You made varsity?
Yeah. No, actually, I only played 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah, I played 2 years, then.
Yeah.
Spent time in academics. And.
Right. You top out at JV or.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And for me, it's the fact that, you know, the fact that I didn't play basketball as much as I wanted to has also been a driving force in my career to work in basketball. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Because you knew early on that you weren't going to be able to make the NBA. Yeah, so you might as well make the NBA in another way.
I went as close as I can to the game. You know, and I've been very fortunate and lucky that we had this data explosion around the same time that I wanted to get in, right? So that was folks like me.
Was your dad really into the NBA? Was your family?
My parents, my dad was into soccer. You know, and coming from India, that, you know, sports, basketball, you know, wasn't something that they were really, you know, too into. You know, what's crazy now? My mom and dad did not miss a Golden State Warriors game. They really? Will not miss one. No.
They're like diehards.
They're diehards, and they're asking me questions. And my dad now thinks he's an analytics guy. You know, he's trying to break down the game to be telling me. So it's, which is pretty cool. You know, it's, not an NBA, so I'm trying to globalize the game, and it's happening.
What would your parents do for a living?
You know, my dad was a machinist working at Kimberly Clark, and my mother worked at a local hospital. She worked in dietary, so just, you know, hardworking folks. And
dietary as in like a nutritionist?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's...
So when you... What exactly led to the job at Microsoft? You just needed a job, basically, and what was the job?
Yeah, so the job was... It was involved in game testing, mm-hmm. So it was working with Xbox in their units, so it was kind of a business development job. And for me, it was... I would take on a job, anything that had to do with basketball. So one thing I would do is I would focus on looking at any Xbox software games and seeing if they were up to date with rules and regulations of basketball. Then looking for any glitches that came about. So
you played video games?
Yeah, I did. Did a lot of that. Did a lot of that. Yeah.
So that doesn't sound like a bad job.
No, it's it has a shelf life.
Yeah.
You know. It has a shelf life.
How long did you do that?
Almost about a year and a half, you know.
Yeah. And by the end of that year and a half, were you getting that itch?
I was done before that year and a half.
Yeah. Mentally.
Yeah, mentally. That's just not what I wanted to do, you know.
Right. And so you quit your job and networked with some agents that I'm guessing you had met through Sond and...
Through the Sonics, yeah. I had been friends with one of the players there.
Which player?
Mohamed Sene.
Oh, yeah. Remember that name? Former number 10 pick in the draft.
Yeah.
Played in the D League for a little bit.
Yeah, played the Sonics for a little bit, too.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
And, you know, it was great working with him. Just, he gave me exposure to the NBA.
Yeah.
You know, you got to see what it is like for someone that barely knows Western culture, knows the language, but like just the hurdles you got to go through, you know,
right.
Setting up your bank account, setting up all these different things.
How long were you with Romar and his staff, and how exactly did that end?
I'm so bad with years.
Yeah.
It's like six, seven years, I want to say, like that.
Okay.
So with Romar, unfortunately, you know, that he was let go, and then we hired Mike Hopkins.
Right.
And Mike Hopkins gets on board, and I'm a little worried now. Like, you know, what's gonna happen? Do I have a job? Do I not have a job? Mike gets on board and has his press conference, and we meet before the press conference for a little bit. After press conference, a couple of days later, he, reaches over to his table and he's like, "I want to bring you on full time. Will you accept my offer?"
Same role.
And I was like, "Yes, you know, I will."
Yeah, because you were probably nervous, right? Were you thinking about looking elsewhere or trying to go to another school or something?
Yeah, I was thinking. You know, we've had I had met with Golden State Warriors, you know, before all this had happened too. Mm-hmm. So we had some conversations that were going in that seemed pretty promising, but he just didn't know.
Right.
Yeah. So I was a little nervous.
Yeah.
What the future looked like.
Yeah.
But, you know, met with Michael, it's great, you know. Now having three kids, you know, Mike Hopkins is one of the top coaches when it comes to zone defense. So, I learned a lot how to defend, you know. No, it was great. It was a great opportunity. You know, I was looking for about 2 to 3 months.
Okay.
And then took a job with the Golden State Warriors.
So, did you just kind of cold email the Warriors, or how did that come about?
Kirk and I had met, I think, a couple years before.
Okay.
I had to come up here for a practice or training camp. I forgot, you know, one of the two. And we, you know, got went to lunch together, got to know each other. And then if you were scouting games, it was like in Las Vegas, Pac-12 tournament, we'd see each other. Just kind of exchanged notes. I was working on this project with virtual reality goggles at Washington. So we would talk about those things.
Okay.
You know, it was great. You know, he was someone that it was great to talk to someone. That was about basketball, also was in tech, but also was in data, right?
Yeah.
There's not that many folks out there like that.
Right.
So it was great, you know.
Right. So you were When exactly were you hired? You were, and what role were you hired in?
I was hired. So my first day, I was hired. You know, 2 summers ago, and my first day. Spring. So my first day at work was the Monday of the week of the NBA draft. So I had my HR meetings.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Do my whole deal.
Yeah.
Then I walk in, and they're, you know, right into the draft room.
And that's like
the war room.
That's like the ultimate analytics day, right?
Yeah. And I'm just like, wow. You know what I mean? And it was such a cool experience. Because that week then prepared me the whole year for the following draft.
And so that year they took, was that the Pat McCaw draft or was it a Jordan Bell draft?
Jordan Bell. Jordan Bell, who was a Pac-12 guy.
Yeah, so you're pretty familiar with him.
Yeah, very familiar with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And were you a fan?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because he's Oregon, right? So like, yeah. Oregon's one of our biggest rivals at Washington.
Yeah.
I like Jordan. You know, it was good to be working with him, not against him anymore.
Yeah.
You know, they got us a couple times.
Yeah. So what did you do last season, and how has your role kind of evolved from last season to this season? Because I know Sammy moving on to the Pistons.
Yeah, so my role last year was more, I would say, focused on, you know, the front office preparing for the draft, and as well as working with the performance team. And then I was helping out the coaches here and there on a couple scouts here and there, and just extra hands during the playoffs. But also it was kind of vetting out how are we going to build out a data infrastructure moving forward, you know, something that's a little bit faster and more robust. That was my role. So this year, how it's changed is now I'm much more involved with the coaches.
Yeah.
Help with, do an analytical scouting report on each opponent, do post-game reports. But then also in between that, do a lot of any questions that Steve might have, or if it's anything that I see, it's kind of be proactive. Just any trends I'm noticing one way or the other, patterns of sorts, and that's pretty much how it's changed.
Steve really appreciates that stuff, right? Yeah, I mean, because he'll use a lot of that in his messaging with the players, right?
Yeah, no, Steve's high level when it comes to this. It's pretty cool. Like, we've kind of put our brains together, and we've kind of talk about certain things that work that don't work, and he's pretty special when it comes to that. Like, his mind just works analytically anyhow.
Yeah.
You know, he's always, which is amazing. A lot of they get Mike Brown too, the same way.
Yeah.
You know, they see numbers. Well, actually, I don't say they see numbers, but they're just clearly what you want.
Right.
They notice patterns and trends, right. And I can help quantify. Which way they.
Is there like some special software you use? Because I'm getting really into the deep dive with Basketball Reference and NBA.com and all that.
So recently, we just 3 weeks ago, we just signed a partnership with Google Cloud. So what I'm doing now is I'm just, so you got all this live data that's coming in. You know, we have up to before it was like dealing with 1 or 2 files. Now we're dealing with tens of thousands of miles. So what I'm trying to do now is I'm trying to centralize all this data. So now what we can do is go deeper and quicker. So when Steve has a question, I can be like, bam, here it is. But then also be like, oh, by the way, this, and that.
Mm-hmm.
So like we're building this whole thing out in-house.
So you talk to Steve pretty much every day?
In some, pretty much. If it's, if it's face-to-face, if it's email, or if it's over text, it's one way or the other. We will touch base.
Do you have a report pretty much every day after the game?
Close, yeah. After the game, he'll have something, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then like maybe something the day after too. Just anything we're noticing.
Right. Is there anything, any trends you're noticing right now that you can talk about? I mean, Steve talks about them with us, so I think
I'll let Steve run with
them. Okay,
Yeah.
Well, but is it the type of situation where, they're recently, they weren't moving the ball the way, they should have been or they're used to, so you're kind of focusing on the passing numbers and that kind of stuff?
And that's the starting point, right? Passes have been down, but what's causing that? You know, anything from a play type to who's on the court.
Yeah. And he's obviously changed his rotations a lot. There's been a lot of talk about the stagger, and he keeps introducing it and bringing it back. And I'm guessing a lot of those decisions are based in, or rooted in, conversations you guys have and reports you guys go over together.
Yeah, I would say it's probably a combination of that, watching film for him, and talking with other coaching staff, But yeah, he's for any, you know, typically when there is a lineup change or if there is staggering, there's numbers that he will see.
What did you learn working with Sammy?
Yeah, you know,
I know he was really highly respected. And had a whole New York Times profile and everything.
Yeah, no, Sammy was big time. You know, Sammy was. I think I was able to kind of like. He did a good job building a relationship with the coaches.
Yeah.
You know, so it's helped me, right, coming in, and you know, filling in some of his responsibilities. I think that's one thing he taught me, and I think another thing is just like, I think it's, you know, these things, you gotta be patient sometimes. You know, to build relationships takes time. You know,
right.
Sammy was able to build that years and years.
Yeah.
You know, of hard work, and I think that's for the most part that's what it kind of taught me. You know, just, and also like a little bit of, you know, different styles of coaches. That was kind of good to know. Different personalities.
Because if your ultimate goal is to be a GM, I was actually having this conversation with Steve like last week because we did a whole story on his time as a GM in Phoenix, and he was talking about how, you know, people think that being a GM is all the draft and free agency and trades, but it's really about relationships 100%. And knowing the players and having that rapport and having that connection with the coaches and the you know, low-level staffers and everything. Right. And is that what you've kind of learned being a part of this organization?
Totally. I think Bob's best at that. Yeah, Bob's great. That's, you know, you're right. I think coming in, I knew a little bit of that, but I didn't know as much as it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
It's not all about just, like, knowing analytics.
No,
it's hard to combine those because a lot of people, the way our brains work,
right. You're one or the other.
You're one or the other. You're a stats geek or you're really good interpersonally.
Right.
But to really be a great GM, you have to have all that. Both. Right?
Yes. For me, it's like, that's why I say I'm a basketball guy that does numbers. That a numbers guy that does basketball. I've always said, right. Like you asked me earlier, like I watch the game a lot, and sometimes a lot of when I see trends, it's from watching the game,
right,
or talking to someone. And numbers as well, you're looking through that, but like, that's the first thoughts. Okay, what do I see on the court? I'm the worst guy to watch a game with, by the way.
How so?
I don't talk.
Really?
No, I don't talk. My wife hates going to games with me.
Do you, I know Sammy sat behind the bench. Do you sit,
No,
behind the bench, right?
No, I sit with our basketball ops team.
Okay.
No, it's just.
You don't rebound for Sean Livingston?
No, I don't. That was Sammy. That was Sammy's.
Yeah. That's very unique, obviously.
Yeah. Which helps, right? It helps build, you know, rapport. And no. I think my role, you know, it's been more kind of long-term planning as well.
Right.
You know, looking at things. So it's, you know, meeting with, so a lot of my job also involves, you know, it's intersection between technology, data, and basketball. But I spend a lot of time trying to learn as well. You know, if it's picking brains of players, of coaches, you know, how they're seeing things. But also, when it comes to tech and data, it's visiting Stanford, it's visiting MIT, talking to professors, see what's on the next, you know, what's the next
thing. How have you seen analytics change the NBA just in the past decade?
You know, the first thing you would think is, like, you're just seeing, you know, people, you know, three ball, right? It's the narrative that's changed. Right, and it's like teams are shooting more, you know, threes. Tempo's gone a little bit faster, but like, I think that's where you see most of the changes.
Right.
But you're seeing a lot more positionless basketball. Right. You're seeing a guy, an individual that can do. Before it was like, you know, you're just good at one thing. You're seeing a lot more folks who are maybe good at a couple things now.
Right.
And I think, that's analytics.
What people used to see as weaknesses, people are now seeing as strengths. Like Draymond's the ultimate example.
Exactly.
Used to be a tweener, but now you're seeing, oh no, he's not a tweener. He's a guy can play four or five positions.
Exactly. And right, to me, the classification of positions has always been foolish, right? Like a point guard, right? You're telling me, like, right? If you go down the Western Conference, are all the point guards the same? They're not, right? So why do we, I get why you have to classify them that way, but I sure don't.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But it's also like, I think your analytics also help you, like you're seeing guys valued that necessarily are filling up box scores,
right?
If box scores, you know, tells you like 20% what's going on. There's another 80% that hasn't been captured, and that's what analytics is trying to hone on.
Right. In your mind, is it just going to continue to build on itself? It's not going to be one of those things that's a phase. Do you think it's going to be something that's a staple in the NBA for a long time.
I think so. Anyway, it's part of the decision making process, and it's a pretty big part. To me, it's always going to be there. It should be there. Right. As I think any decision maker should always take a look at it. But the thing is, it's got to be put together properly. Like when people say analytics, it's just, analytics, like there's so much to analytics, right? It's like saying marketing or it's saying like the other things, right? Like there's not every analytic guy is the same. There's every,
right.
There's different forms of it.
Mm-hmm. How do you like living in the Bay? I know it sounds like you were in Seattle area your whole life.
So. Love Seattle, man.
I'm Pacific Northwestern myself.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah, Portland.
That's right. So I love Portland too.
Yeah.
Voodoo Donuts,
Yeah. I've been to Seattle many times.
Yeah, no, I love Seattle, and I don't think I could ever fall in love with another city until I came here. This place is super special, especially in what I'm doing. Like I mentioned earlier, like technology, data, and basketball. Is there a better place in the world for all three?
Yeah.
I don't think there is.
No.
You know? No, this is great. And the weather, that's one thing I don't miss about Seattle is the weather.
Yeah.
And this past week was unbelievable. This weekend, 70 degrees.
Yeah.
I heard Seattle was 70 on Sunday, though, too. But,
right.
I absolutely love it here. I love the people here, too.
Right. Organization, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I don't get a chance to, meet any people outside of basketball as much. But the people here, they're unbelievable. It's one of the reasons why this job team was exciting. It's what people are like, oh, it's the Warriors. Like, yeah, but, it's honestly the people. I was very fortunate to be around some wonderful people at Washington with Romar, just classic guy. And Rick Suns, a great guy. So when you get around these people, you gravitate towards them. Even at Washington, I was mentioned like Chris Peterson, still a guy got to know pretty well. And
you kind of moonlighted, right, with the football team?
Yeah, a little bit. This was more with Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did some stuff with them. But then with Chris Peterson, did some little stuff with him. But then just being around, for him, I was excited because his ability to recruit guys who are five-star players, who are three-star, but they fit the system and saw success. That, to me, was for a leadership in a strategically, somebody that I try to be around and learn from as much as possible. He's also a huge fan of the Golden State Warriors.
He is?
I would say... fan of say Steve Kerr and just the way he carries himself.
Yeah.
I see some
similarities between them. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to set them up for for a lunch or something.
Yeah.
And if I just want to be on the back wall, just listen to those great minds. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
It'd be powerful.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you were talking about in the basketball game with the Huskies, you would actually relay information in games. I'm wondering, are you able to do that with the Warriors? Does that happen in the NBA? I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if that is or not.
But you don't do it?
No, I don't do that. No.
Yeah.
No, I don't do that.
Okay. At some point, you would think it's almost information overload for coaches.
Yeah.
Just let me focus on my rotation.
Let me do my thing. Yeah, yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Who knows what the future holds in that, but that's something that we're not currently doing.
I want to thank Pavel for joining me on this week's podcast. Had a great time getting to know him. Warriors Off Court is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Audrey Cooper is the editor-in-chief. If you like this show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've got a minute to give us a quick review, that helps us build our audience so we can keep growing. Follow me on Twitter at @con_cron and email me at claterno@sfchronicle.com. Support Warriors Off Court and a lot of great journalism with a subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. There are print and digital editions. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.